Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, founder and CEO of ScaleUp Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And really excited today to welcome Christoph onto the show. Christoph is the co-founder and GM at DeliverMe.City. Previous to that, he has worked in business and entrepreneurship for a number of years. He scaled and exited a couple of businesses. I think this is your fourth business now, Christoph. So, super excited to get you onto the show today and actually talk through an important subject, which is B2B, B2C, and how to scale that. So welcome, and exciting times to talk about this.
Thank you, Richard. I'm really honored to be your guest today, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Brilliant. And folk, as always, I like to give us an all a bird's eye view as to what we're going to be discussing today. And as we all know, most companies fall into two broad categories. They're either B2B or B2C. And every company needs to tailor their marketing messages and sales strategies and operational setup in order to make certain that you grow and scale, and also to interact with your public in the right way, right? But what if your company is selling both these audiences? Many companies are doing just that with specific challenges and varying results. And despite the differences, all marketing is ultimately aimed at who? The people that you're serving. And most companies that are either B2B or B2C, for those that buck the trend and encompass both, naturally face marketing, sales, and also operational challenges. So we're going to get stuck into the detail of this today because Christoph has some great and relevant experience that he's wanting to share with us. Maybe Christoph, the easiest place to start off is, let's start off maybe at your journey. Just give everyone a bit of a subtext to your life as an entrepreneur, and then we can get into the detail of this conversation. So if you can just give us a bit of a high level view as to your journey, what it's entailed, and also specifically your journey around B2B, B2C.
Thank you for this introduction, Richard. Well, in my previous years as an entrepreneur, I scaled like three startups, as you said. The last one is the fourth. And two of them have been B2B and B2C, both companies. The first one was called Receive and Pay. It was like a Klarna competitor. Yeah. And the last one is Linxo. And we were, because I'm not anymore there, but it's an open banking company. So basically, we were born as a B2B and B2C company because at the time we launched in 2010, open banking didn't exist. The words didn't exist. The business didn't exist. So first, we wanted to answer question of how people deal with their money and how can we help them on that journey. So basically, we just began not trying to be a B2B or a B2C business, but trying to understand a problem that an issue that there was, it was existing. It was existing if you had only one bank. It was like a nightmare if you had many banks.
On your travels, I mean, I guess you've gone through various iterations, but I think maybe one of the important topics to discuss up front is how you set your team up if you have this maybe dual voice into your public, or how did you go about approaching your team setup from both a B2B, B2C perspective?
Oh, well, that's a really tough question because it really depends on how mature is the market and what are your strengths. When we launched, to answer a question that was the end customer question, how do I do if I need to manage my money? How do I answer those financial daily questions? Where is going my money? How much can I save? Will I be on overdraft this week? So we went from these questions and we were like, okay, can we do that? Can we build something that answers those questions? So the first step was to build a tech that could do this. Can we aggregate the data and put it in perspective for an end customer? And if we use it as ourselves, can we then expand to others? So the first step was we need to build a tech that makes it available for everyone, and a tech that needs to be reliable. Because we're talking about financial services, monies, you cannot be like approximative, is it half of the data or something? Mm-hmm. You need to have a reliable tech. And then on that, the first question was, we want to go to the market and we need to test our market fit. So to test the market fit, I would say that the first thing we did is we went to the banks and we went to the main public and we tested. So the team we need to made was, like the sales for the B2B, it was myself and Bruno, another co-founder. And then on the B2C side, a marketing and a product team, so that we could launch a product, a mobile app at the time. First a website and then very quickly a mobile app, and then test the markets. And at the very beginning, when we went and see some banks, they were saying like, we do not understand. Are you trying to disrupt our market? And that was funny because we were not trying to disrupt anything. We were just trying to answer some questions. So at the very beginning, banks were saying no. The financial French ecosystem of fintechs was very small at the time. So we went through the public. And the public, there were like a huge demand on that. We quickly went from 0 to 800,000 customers. Then the B2B began to have some interest on that. Why are there so many customers going on that? Can I do something with that? So if it were to be done today, maybe we would set up the team differently. But at the time, the setup was, okay, let's have a strong tech because you need to be reliable. And then let's quickly go to the market, both on B2B and B2C side, and to see what catches.
I like it. So you developed the product, you went out to markets. On the B2B side and also the B2C side, as you started gaining traction in the market and people obviously were noticing you, how did your communication across these different publics differ, if they did differ, or actually remain the same? How did you manage that?
This is also a tough question because there is no one unique answer that works in every case. So we like test and learn. So the three key points I would say that I think are important is the first thing is, do you need to have a clear value proposition for each of your business? So on the B2B side, what we were selling is a scalable and reliable open banking services. And then you can create, you as a fintech or as a bank, you can create your own value for your customer. We only do that. And on the B2C side, we only add one value proposition, which is helping you with the daily financial questions. Anyone, any kind of bank you have, we will help you on that. I would say the first point is to have a clear value proposition. The second point, which is the toughest one, is the branding topic. Should you use the same brand or two brands? On that topic, I should say that there is no definitive answer. We begin with only one brand because at that point, we, as I said at the very beginning, we had only traction from the B2C customers, and then we had traction on the B2B side. So we decided to say, okay, it's one brand and we will go further with that. And then came the regulation, the PSD2 regulation. The PSD2 regulation created like a framework for a B2B companies like ours. Mm-hmm. So it was getting clearer that there was a business for that, and that was a regulated business, so there were no more risks. From 2015 and on, and when the PSD2 came into force in 2018, we clearly saw the value of separating the two brands. So we created, Linxo was the existing brand, and we created Oxlane, which was the B2B brand. and we pushed them both. At the very end, we felt like we needed to come back to one brand. There's always advantages and drawbacks. If you have one brand, well, it's less costly, it's easier to protect, but it's more difficult to differentiate between the two proposals. Mm-hmm. It's also more difficult for SEO purpose. So yeah. When a B2B customer needs to find you, you will find your B2C brand, but will not find your B2B proposal if you have only one brand. But on the other side, it's really costly to get international with two brands, because you will have to do the work on every country twice, and it's much more expensive. So at the end, we decided to come back to one brand, Linxo for the B2C, and Linxo, which is now Linxo Connect for the B2B, for the open banking services. But the brand question is something very important, but I would say that there is no definitive answer on that. Maybe the third lesson on the communication for the public is that you need to, your tech teams, they need to be the same, because we hit our own dog food. So we are the first ones to hit that. On the front side, on the marketing and sales team, I think you need to have like specific dedicated teams. And then on the product side also, because a SaaS product is not like a mobile app, so it's very different. So I would say that you need to be very strong on your tech stack, but your tech stack needs to be very open, in a sense that you will use it as your first customer, but you will be more demanding or as demanding as the others. And then you need to have dedicated teams so that you can scale both on a quick path.
Building our two brands is costly, because you obviously potentially doubling the amount of resources, efforts, etc. What led you to initially make that decision? Was it playing this out? What in the market or what feedback did you get that actually you then decided, other than costs, that you then decided actually the route to go down for this instance, in this instance, was one brand and joining back up together again?
At the very beginning, what made us build those two brands is that we had like two very different proposals, and that some customers, B2B customers, they would see us as a competitor. So because we were providing open banking services and we were also using them. Let's say that someone who would like to build a super app, a money management app, they would see us as both a provider and a competitor. So it was unclear for them. This was the first reason. The second reason was also for external questions, because the press, it was very difficult for them to understand the B2B and the B2C business. Why do you do both? At the time, there was like very few companies doing both. Now, if you look at now, Klarna launched in B2B and they now do B2C. United Credit, which is like a French Zopa, they do both. But at the time, it was like very specific. So those were the two reasons. And what made us come back to one brand, mainly it's because we were very well known on the Linxo brand. It's like everyone would be searching for Linxo, even from B2B customers. Because B2B customers, they will test you. They are demanding that as you have a B2C brand and B2C service, they will test you on the B2C service even before meeting you or before getting in contact with you. So it's like a very good way to reach B2B customers, because most of them, they know us because they were using us as a B2C service. So at the end of the time, we say, okay, there are advantages and drawbacks on both sides, but advantages are very strong on the one brand topic.
As all of this plays out from a brand perspective anyway, the one key critical point that you keep on making here is communication. Being able to communicate to your public, whether that public is the press, i.e. journalists, whether it's investors, whether it's your B2B folk or your B2C folk, always consistently communicating a message, whether it's, you know, in the B2B channel or the B2C channels, but consistently getting that message out there. So people know you, people hear you, you become familiar, and they also obviously start engaging with you as customers and or clients, right? And as part of that, I mean, I assume that as you building up these two machines, you've already mentioned that you're able to leverage your teams, you're able to leverage your product and tech teams. It's difficult to leverage sales and marketing in the same way. So how did those two entities in this world work as one overall company, all moving towards the same objective, right? So you're able to really power up and move towards your mission and your stated goal, even though you have slightly separate teams in some instances and slightly different dynamic in other instances.
The key point here was to, and it's something that's not so easy to do because you have to repeat it, because when you scale fast, you have new people entering at each time. And the people, maybe they knew you from the B2C or the B2B business, but yeah. The key point here is repeating why you do the things you do. And the why was always the same from the beginning. What we wanted to do is to help people with their money, whether this would be by ourselves or by things that others could do based on our technology. Mm-hmm. For example, we would like to open a loan. It would be easier to do it with an open banking technology, and it was our technology. So we would remain on the same mission, that is helping people with all that matters on money on their side, whether that would be directly or indirectly, because others will do also will have some good value propositions for their end customers. Mm. But the technology is the same underneath.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
Just to get into the detail of your operations, I mean, you know, we got your why, we got your purpose. People are obviously pushing towards their goal. How did you make certain that there's strong communication lines across both businesses all the time? Although I know scaling, there's new people coming in, as you mentioned. I also know that in order to scale, you've got to continuously communicate, right? If you have these two different entities, what are the things that you learned, or what are the things that you put into place that really made your teams gel together as one unit?
We like to gather once a month, and we did it even after the COVID, not gathering in physics, obviously, but gathering via Zoom or Google Meet. But yeah. What we would do always is once a month, we will share how were we going in terms of our mission is this one. We are both working on that. What are the results from one side and the results for other side? And what are the gains from the end to another? Mm-hmm. So when many people see that as, you're doing both businesses, it's a lack of focus. Mm-hmm. But it's an edge you have on the competitors, because when you do B2C, you're more demanding. You know exactly what the customers want. You knew, for example, on banking connection, what were the most important connections you need to be super reliable on them. You have an edge, and this edge, it's for your company. And you have also an edge in doing B2B business, because when you do B2B business, you have high volumes, because you aggregate your volumes and your customers. So your costs get lower and you can provide more services to your B2C customers and more for your B2B. So it's all a question of explaining what is the gain for you, what is the gain for the company. And you have the privilege to have one of your most demanding customers right in the house that can speak to you frankly and say, hey, this thing is not working well, this thing is working well. It's something like a privilege, because if it's someone outside, you have a contract, you have something, but maybe they will leave you and without notice because you haven't seen anything before the end of the contract. And when you have a customer inside, it's like a privilege.
I often say to my clients, one of the first things you should do and the first board you should put in place is a client advisory board. And they look at me and they go, well, what do you mean by that? So I say, well, do you have prospects? Do you have clients? And they nod their head and I go, But why don't you ask them? Why don't you ask them to come and be inside your company, be that person that can critically inspect or investigate certain things? And it might be uncomfortable, but get them in. 10 times out of 10, when it happens, actually only good things happen. Those prospects actually turn into clients, and those clients also provide valuable information so they can not only upskill, but upgrade certain parts of internal functionality. So I agree with you. So it is a privilege, right, to have clients in there giving you valuable information all the time.
Yeah, I love the idea. It's a brilliant idea. I love that. You should always have a chair for a client or a prospect in your world. I love that.
You know, I feel that we put in place layers of bureaucracy in order to actually do the simplest things. And when we started this conversation, we said marketing and sales and anything to do with business is what? It's about one common denominator, people. So, you know, get the people inside your tent that you serve in, and it makes life a bit different, right? It makes maybe life a bit easier. And it's pretty much exactly what you just say, Nazar, which is pretty cool. I like it. As we move on and as we explore other things, what do you think are the three key aspects that a founder and an executive team actually should focus on if they're growing a B2B, B2C business? What are the two, three big chunks of or big components that they need to really look at, strategize over, plan for, and then execute on?
I would say that first thing in a fintech business is tech. You should focus on building right from the day one a scalable and open tech stack. So scalable means that you will have volume, and especially because you will be your first customer. On day one, you need to think about, I will have outside customers. So I need to, my tech needs to be an open API. So when you say that in 2022, it's like, it's obvious. Everyone does that. But yeah, when you did that like 7 years ago or 10 years ago, it was like, why would you do so complex things if you are your own customer? So I would say the first thing is focus on building a scalable and open tech stack. The second thing would be have dedicated teams for the growth side. So the growth on B2B is not the same as the growth on the B2C. So what I mean by growth is marketing and sales team, especially. Mm-hmm. You need to have dedicated people because selling a SaaS software is not the same as selling a mobile app on the App Store or Google Play Store. And on the product side, your tech and your main product is an API, but on the front side, you need to have product people on the B2B side that understand what is a mobile app, understand what is specific to that, because the B2C is like super demanding. When the customer doesn't understand something, he doesn't get in touch with you. He just stops using you. 1 out of 10 will maybe contact you saying, okay, I love your product, but I don't like this. But 9 out of 10, they just stop using you. So it's very, very quick. And you don't have the privilege to wait for some weeks or days. The third thing I would say is that as the founding team and the executive team, they need to focus on the purpose. As I said, repeat, repeat, repeat the why you do both. Because everyone, from time to time, they will have a good reason to ask, why are we doing those two things? Competition is not doing that. I think we would go faster if we wouldn't be doing that. So from time to time, people will ask themselves the question, and you need to preempt that. So you need to repeat always why, and to give proof of that. So we are doing this because of that, but the proof is that when we do that, there's a benefit right there. You have the proof with KPIs, with revenues, with everything, but you need to do it and repeat relentlessly, because sometimes you forget, as the founding team, you forget that because you're inside for many years, but people are arriving, people, they're new to that, so they need to have this message.
Those are brilliant pieces of advice and golden nuggets. So folk out there, if you haven't noted this down, just, you know, go back and listen to it again, because those, if you follow those three little steps there, it's going to help you out a lot. But listen, as we walk out into the flash round, which is a bit of fun, Anything else you wanted to say to the audience with regards to scaling a B2B, B2C offering in the fintech world before we head into the flash round?
Yeah, well, I would say that if you believe in your positioning, stick to it. It will be very difficult because even the odds are against you. I remember when in maybe 2016 or 2017, we were looking at the unicorns and there was like one unicorn between maybe 200 that was B2B and B2C. So all the odds were against us. And even from VC funds, they would say, why are you doing both? So if you strongly believe that it will bring you value, stick to it. If you don't believe it, stop and focus on one of the two businesses. But odds are against you, but the long term will be with you. And even you can see today that some of the companies, some of the biggest fintech unicorns, they're moving from one side to sometimes two sides.
Okay, so now we're going to the flash round. Folk out there, I think you know what it is, but for Christoph, flash round is a bit of fun at the end. We give the listeners a chance to see the personality of our guests. And also, I give you the microphone. Give me a dig, ask me a question. So how it works is I ask Christoph three questions, then I give you the microphone and you are allowed to ask me one question. That is the rules. I didn't make them up. The listeners did. Okay, so here we go. The first thing, I think I know the answers to most of them, but let's take a look if my predictions are correct. What is more important in fintech? Is it marketing or is it the product?
Well, tough question. Should I do the drum rolls too?
Yeah.
This one is very difficult to answer for one and the other. Both are very important. It's if you do a great marketing without a good product, you will fail. If you do great product without marketing, you will fail. So you need to be excellent on both. That's the difficult point.
Yeah, I agree. And great answer. Great answer. Okay, so I'll leave the best one for last, but this is a pretty good one. Is the metaverse a fad?
Oh, this one is really hard. I knew the Second Life, which was a kind of first version of the metaverse. I think that it's not a fad, but there will be some use cases, strong use cases. It's very difficult to see what will emerge from that. Yeah. But I do believe there's something that will shine from that. Exactly as if you were talking by in 2005, 2006, when we launched the first startup, there was no fintech, and people would say, okay, finance is only for banks. Why are you doing like payments or things like that? It's not for you. So I think metaverse is on that stage, but very difficult to say who will win and what use cases will win.
Okay, and now the most important question. I'm wearing the hat, so here we go. What is the best tennis tournament in the world? Roland Garros or Wimbledon?
Well, I think you made a choice because the listeners are not viewing your hat, but you have a Roland Garros hat. So yeah. I think you made a choice and I will be happy. The truth is I've never been to Wimbledon. I've been to Roland Garros. So if you invite me, I will love to say that Wimbledon is the best. As of today, I need to say that Roland Garros is the only one I saw and a very good one.
Yeah, brilliant. And listen, I'm going to concur. I was out there on the weekend and it was absolutely amazing. And yes, let me see if I can get you some tickets. Let's see what my network can do.
It's going to be great.
Okay, so now another difficult part or the fun part. I give you the mic and I'm sure there's some question you've been waiting around all week, all month, all year to ask yourself. What is that question?
Yeah, well, I'm curious because you know lots of the ecosystem of the fintech, and what would you see as an expert of the fintech ecosystem? What would you see as the problems that are still unsolved in the fintech ecosystem? And the second maybe question would be, where would you invest now if you were to invest in the fintech ecosystem? That's two questions
That's a sneaky one. But hey, okay. So here's the thing. I think fintech has made great strides in the last few years. You mentioned 08, it wasn't even a word, right? Now all of a sudden, a few years later, and you know, we are all talking about it. So it's made leaps and bounds, but still there is lots to be done when it comes to accessibility and inclusivity financial services out to the masses. You know, I was speaking to a startup that is going out to Soweto and Alexandra out in Johannesburg in the next, well, they're doing it right now. They're taking their product out there. And these folk, they do not have access to proper financial services. Still today, they do not have access to proper financial services. And us in the Western world don't see that. So I still think there's a lot of work to be done in places, you know, like Africa, even in the UK, in Europe, and also in the US, around how to get, you know, financial services out to those that actually also need it. Everyone needs it. So why can't why can't everyone access it? Why can't everyone have a mobile wallet? So everyone have access to crypto. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a big journey there. And I think there's still a lot of work to be done. Where would I, if I was an investor, what would I be looking at right now? So there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the metaverse. I think right now there's, you know, I'm going to play a bit of devil's advocate, right? So there's the big R word that people are talking about. You know, a recession is on the horizon. And generally out of a recession comes a new wave of innovation and creativity. And my feeling, talking to, you know, founders out there, not just in financial services, in fintech, but just sort of in tech and in general, is things such as metaverse, crypto, digital twins. These type of innovations have been around, and now it's their time to shine. So I am definitely looking at potentially taking on different types of investments myself and roles myself to be part of this new wave. I just see it as the next evolution outside of the pandemic and the leveling up of our digital communication universe, from the internet to Teams to something such as, you know, the metaverse and digital twins, etc., that we all can really participate in and really take the, in inverted commas, for those folks that are listening, the internet to the next stage. So part of that, obviously, is fintech and financial services. And they should not just be part of it. In my view, they should be the ones that are leading the change. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm involved in right now. But, yeah, hope that answered your question, both of them.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Thank you for answering both of them. I love the clear view and the clear vision you have on those topics.
Okay, brilliant. And folks, I always ask the guests to leave their details. So Christoph, if people out there want to get in touch with you or take a look at your projects, what's the best route?
Well, the easiest way is to connect me on LinkedIn, Christoph Martins. And you can, if you have a hard way to find me, Christoph Martins FinTech or LinkSwore or the Living City, but you will find easily. And obviously, I will give all details for your listeners. And I would be happy to connect.
Brilliant. And yes, I'll leave all the details in the show notes, everyone. So no need to scroll that down. Everything will be left in the show notes. And, you know, finally, Christoph, thanks for spending time with us today. It's really interesting, a really interesting topic that we dived in. I know we went into different parts of it and there's lots of other things to unpack. But thanks for taking time. Really enjoyed it. And I'm going to welcome you to Wimbledon, maybe this summer even, right?
Oh, well, great. Thank you. And I hope we will go to Roland Garros next time together.
Okay, there we go. We've stopped tickets and everyone's heard it. So now I'm going to play it back to you. Brilliant. Yeah, thanks for coming on today. And yeah, looking forward to watching your success with your current venture.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.